This is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. On this segment, we're going to be talking about bullying in the workplace and what it involves, who it involves, what obligations employers have, etc., etc. So I think you might find this very interesting. My guests are labor and employment law attorneys Theodora Lee, a shareholder in the worldwide law firm of Littler Mendelsohn. She's in the San Francisco office. She's an advisor to the Labor and Employment Law section of the State Bar. My other guest is Aaron Minnis, a partner in the San Francisco law firm of Minnis and Smollett. Funding for this segment of Your Legal Rights is made possible by the Labor and Employment Law section of the State Bar of California. Additional funding is provided by the California Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar, the Family Law section of the State Bar, and the Lawyer Referral Service of the Bar Association of San Francisco. Theo and Aaron, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.
It's great to have you here.
We're glad to be here.
You know, I have done in the past a program or two talking a little bit about bullying, and I know at this point that bullying, we do not have a law that says bullying by itself is a violation of California law. But before we get and talk about where that is going, how would you describe what workplace bullying is, Theo?
Well, you know, there is no statute that makes bullying illegal in the California or anywhere throughout the United States. However, bullying is a status-blind harassment that affects the victim's mental and physical health. To prove unlawful harassment, you have to tie it to some type of protective category like race or sex. In contrast, bullying focuses not on the protected category, but the impact of the abusive conduct on the individual. So in short, bullying conduct is status blind harassment. There are some examples of what bullying, yelling, screaming, constant and unfair criticism, intimidating employees by undermining performance, not giving credit where credit is due, setting up employees to fail, use of malicious gossip and rumors to intimidate, hostile facial expressions, gestures, or body language, social bantering and teasing, isolation in the workplace, insults, put-downs, monopolizing supplies, use of social media to harass, tampering with personal effects and work equipment,
threats or acts of aggression.
It's all kinds of stuff that's bullying.
Yeah, let me stop you there and Theo represents employers.
Correct.
Just so everybody understands who's who here. Aaron represents plaintiffs.
That's right.
Employees. Aaron, have you had any cases where bullying has been involved? And obviously, as Theo has said, there is no California law, let alone throughout the United States, that sets up bullying as an actionable violation to begin with, under employment law.
That's correct. So there is no law in California that outlaws bullying per se. There's a law that's effective this year that requires employers provide training about bullying, but that law does not go so far as to give an employee a legal claim for bullying if the law is violated. Now, having said that, there are a lot of calls that I get from employees where part of the narrative or part of the circumstances that the employee is in involves an aspect of bullying. And they're all the things that Theo just mentioned earlier. And that's malicious behavior, epithets or derogatory remarks, intimidating and humiliating verbal or physical conduct. And some of those things that could be classified as bullying would give rise to other claims, such as harassment or an unsafe working environment. And, of course, there are laws against that.
So that would be – so you could bring in – you as the plaintiff's lawyer could bring an action for harassment.
Correct.
And that part of the probably the facts that you would want to present should it go to trial would be what was going on in terms of bullying in the workplace and how that affected this person as far as the action for – involving harassment. Is that right?
Correct. So if somebody came to me with a story about how they've been bullied in the workplace, I would ask more questions of that employee to try to elicit why they think they are being bullied.
So if religion was involved or there was a protected class, let's say someone was gay, for example, or there was a disability, those are examples of what you would be looking for?
Exactly. I mean, if I had a female employee call me and said, said that my boss is bullying me, and I would ask, well, is your boss male or female? And if she said he's a male, and I would ask, well, how does your boss treat your male coworkers? And if she said he's nice to them or he doesn't subject them to the same type of treatment, then that would indicate to me that there might be a bias going on. The boss, the male boss, has a problem with his female employee, and that would indicate that there might be sex discrimination.
Yeah, that's one of the theories that I see that plaintiffs are pursuing to try to get around the fact that there is no actual statutory protection. But I want to talk about the AB 2053, which went into effect this year. As Aaron mentioned earlier,
this is a part of state law, California state law,
AB 2053, which amended AB 1825, which required employers to train supervisors every 2 years on harassment. This law actually imposes an obligation for them to add bullying to the training that they are providing to their supervisors. And the interesting thing that I think, and that I would be also interested in hearing from Aaron, is AB 2053 actually gives us a definition of what abusive conduct is under state law. They say abusive conduct is made with malice, one that a reasonable person would find hostile, offensive, and unrelated to the employer's legitimate business interests, repeated infliction of verbal abuse, such as use of derogatory marks, insults, epithets, verbal or physical conduct that a reasonable person would find threatening, intimidating, and humiliating, and the sabotage or undermining of a person's work performance. And it does say that a single act does not constitute abusive conduct unless it's severely egregious. Now, with that definition in mind, I'm curious, Aaron, whether you think this is the beginning of the state of California trying to make bullying unlawful.
Well, I hope it is. I mean, obviously, you know, because there are a lot of people that feel bullied at work. It's unacceptable behavior at work. We don't tolerate it in the schools. We don't tolerate it in our personal lives. And so it would seem to me that having a law against bullying in the workplace would make good sense. I think we already have a framework in place, if you will, of how we would evaluate those claims in court. We have a definition of bullying. I'm wondering, though, how does the requirement that you provide training, and that's what the law requires, it doesn't give employees a new legal claim to sue under.
Let me ask you a question, if I may, about this, because I haven't had experience, certainly, in the practice of law with this. But if an employer is required to do training for bullying under 2053, mm-hmm. Is that correct?
That's correct.
AB 2053. If an employee in the establishment, whatever it may be, whether it's a small mom-and-pop situation or a big corporation, feels that bullying is going on but there's no training, does that employee have a right to bring an action against the employer for failure to train?
No. Presently, no.
That's too bad.
No.
Well, then what's the sanction?
Well, the sanction is part of what we have to prove as part of a defense for employers. That if we provide this training, we can basically say that we have done everything to prevent harassment or bullying in the workplace. Now, the Department of Fair Employment and Housing could actually take action against an employer for failure to conduct the training, just as they did under the prior law.
Okay.
But there is no individual claim that a person could actually make. Now, I've seen plaintiffs' lawyers, most of my clients, if not all of them, do their training. So I've not had the experience of a plaintiff's lawyer actually pursuing a argument that because they failed to do the training, it is evidence that they failed to take reasonable steps to ensure that it was an environment free of harassment. Now, Aaron, I'm just curious as whether you've had the opportunity to pursue a claim like that.
Well, first of all, the training requirement doesn't apply to all employers, correct?
Yes,
it only applies
50
or more.
50 or more.
So
okay.
Mom and pops aren't going to be affected by this requirement. Number two, if an employer with 50 or more employees does not provide the training and an employee is bullied at work or maybe even complains that there's no training being provided and is retaliated against for making that complaint,
okay.
I would argue that the law requiring training is a sufficient public policy concern that would allow the employee to go into court and say, I was wrongfully fired.
Okay.
And so that's where how I would
unlawful termination of employment.
Correct.
And in that same regard, in light of this new statute, I mean, have you considered or are you thinking about pursuing public policy claims with AB 2053 as the basis for such a policy?
To be honest with you, if I were presented with that scenario, I would look for other related claims to bring, meritorious related claims, because there would be a significant chance that the claim could be knocked out and you would want to have backup claims. So, for example, if you've got an employee who's being bullied and you want to bring a claim about a public policy related to that statute, that employee may also suffer from a disability, mm-hmm. where if they're being bullied, the strain and stress of being bullied may exacerbate a condition such as anxiety or depression or some other recognized disability. And you would have a disability discrimination claim, perhaps.
Under what? The Americans with Disabilities Act or also the California
and the state,
comparable?
Correct. The state counterpart, which is mm-hmm. the Fair Employment and Housing Act, mm-hmm. and that outlaws disability discrimination.
If an employee feels he or she is being bullied and understands from, if listening to this program, that there is not an action under California law or whatever state you may be in, but there is not, based upon any law, the individual right to bring an action for bullying. However, if someone is being bullied, does that person have the right to file some kind of a complaint with the California Department of Fair Employment and Housing? And is that what that person should do to begin with?
That is certainly one option, which would be to file a complaint. That in and of itself is protected activity so long as that employee believes that their rights are being violated.
Yes.
In other words, if somebody comes forward with a complaint about discrimination, that is protected activity. They don't have to actually prove discrimination is occurring. They just have to prove they have a reasonable belief.
Okay.
Correct. Yeah, but let me stop you, Aaron. Okay, if this person is just saying that they're being bullied and they're not in a protected classification, or they've not engaged in protective activity, just simply filing a complaint with the DFEH saying that I've been bullied is not going to give them a cause of action for retaliation. They have to have a reasonable good faith belief that what they're complaining about is a violation of the statute. And right now, you and I both agree that bullying is not actually illegal under any statute. And the DFEH has not indicated that they're going to take complaints for bullying.
Well, but filing a complaint with a government agency
is a protected activity, but you have to have
Wait a minute. Please, Theo. Let him finish. I know you're... Well, you should... We should be on TV. Go ahead.
Filing a complaint with a state agency is an encouraged protected activity. It would chill the employee's rights to engage in that activity if an employer was free to retaliate against the employee for doing so. It doesn't matter whether the DFEH outlaws bullying. That's certainly the trend. That's where we're moving. And to say that, you didn't check the right box, or we don't have a law yet against bullying per se, therefore you're out of luck, that would seem unfair to me.
Let me stop both of you right now, if you don't mind, because I want to let the listeners know this is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. We're talking about bullying in the workplace. My guests are Theodora Lee, who's the one who I have to try to control here. She is an advisor to the Labor and Employment Law Section. Theo has been a guest on the program before and is obviously, as you can hear, this woman has incredible energy. My other guest is Aaron Minnis. Aaron has been very much involved with this program over the years. When we've done on usually the fourth Wednesday of the month, Call a Lawyer, Aaron has been in the conference room here at the station taking calls off the air on employment law. So these are my guests. Now, for those of you who are listening to the program live, whether you are in the Bay Area or whether you're on the internet at www.kalw.org, we're not going to take any calls until the second half hour. So be patient, and then I will give the phone number. Actually, we have a toll-free number, so be patient, and then you'll be able to call in the second half hour. So, all right. Now, Theo, I had to stop you, but go ahead.
Well, my whole thing is that if an employee files a complaint with the DFEH on a basis that's not covered under the statute, they could not have reasonably believed that they were complaining about a violation of the law. And as you have to acknowledge, in order to have a retaliation claim, the employee must have reasonably believed that they were complaining about a violation of the law. And it's in black and white that bullying, there is no independent statutory protection against that.
But I think the employee who is going to take the step of actually complaining externally to a government agency, where you can actually get help from the agency in terms of filling out the complaint and the questionnaire and so forth, that person is going to identify perhaps other protected bases that they feel the bullying may be linked to. So, for example, if you feel bullied and that's your motivation for going to the DFEH and filing a complaint, then you may identify other bases that you believe the bullying is based on. So I disagree with you. I think that type of activity, especially if you link it to other bases, is going to be protected activity. If you're retaliated against, the employer is going to get sued for retaliation.
I agree if they can link it to a protected category. But if they can't link it to a protected category, how are they going to file a complaint? And I hope the DFEH rejects such a claim.
Let me throw this out then. Okay. Bullying is something that now is prohibited in the schools. Is that correct? We have California law prohibiting kids from being bullied by other kids?
That's correct. Under the education code.
Under the education code, California education code. Where do you think, Aaron, we are going in California, as far as the legislature is concerned, to enact a bill and pass it and have the governor approve it, where bullying in and by itself will be actionable?
I think we're moving in that direction. I think there are several other states that are moving in that direction. I think it's going to take time, obviously. I think there's concern about adding yet another basis for an employee to come forward and sue an employer. I think bullying may be a bit more difficult to define in terms of what constitutes bullying, how severe or pervasive the conduct has to be before it becomes actionable. There's a definition that links it to an objective or reasonable person standard.
Mm-hmm.
But bullying often is...
What is a reasonable person standard?
Well,
tell us what that is.
That's a great question.
Who is a
reasonable person? Yeah. Something that may affect me very deeply may not affect Theo at all.
So
how do we
determine who the reasonable person is? What do we do?
Well, what I have experienced in the area of harassment, it's really the eggshell plaintiff. I mean, if someone has been a victim of some type of physical abuse in the past, that actually causes the harassment to seem far more severe to
mm-hmm.
them.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a reasonable person in the shoes of the person who's complaining
mm-hmm.
is what I tell my clients. So even if you and I, as reasonable people, would not consider this to be abusive behavior, given this person's background,
mm-hmm.
we may have to treat it as such. And I tell all my clients anyway, if you get a complaint of bullying, if you get a complaint of harassment, if you get any type of complaint, your obligation is to investigate that complaint
sure.
and take it seriously. So I don't ask, I suggest to my clients that they don't make a evaluation as to whether or not this particular conduct is severe and pervasive enough to meet the actionable legal definition, but take action if an employee complains.
Let me throw this one out to you. If under AB 2053, which is California law right now, where it is required that employers do training, mandatory training of their employees to tell them what bullying is and what they must not do. If, for example, the employer sees what's going on in a department, let's say this is a business of over 50 people, and has received a report from employees saying, I'm being bullied by so-and-so over there, and the employer observes, let's say, over the fence or whatever it is, observes that there was bullying, does the employer have the obligation under 2053 to bring in the bullying employee and talk with that person and inform that person, hey, you're bullying Ms. So or Mr. D?
I don't think the law requires
yeah.
that the employer bring that person in. But as good business practice to avoid being sued, my recommendation is if you get a complaint of bullying, if you observe bullying, you should investigate and take appropriate corrective action, mm-hmm. which would require you bringing in that employee to investigate and to find out what exactly happened and take appropriate disciplinary action. We don't want this kind of workplace behavior. Mm-hmm. I mean, whether it's illegal or not. Now, going back to what Aaron said.
Before you do that, the other thing is, you know, it's not like there are bright lines between this. Somebody who comes in on day one and says, I'm being bullied by so-and-so, on day three, that may morph into a different situation where that person is trapped in the elevator with so-and-so,
oh.
and it becomes a sexual contact or a sexual overture.
Yeah.
So the employer, Theo's correct, the employer is best advised that if it's on notice of an issue, regardless of how the employee frames the issue as bullying or something else, the employer would be prudent to talk with the employee, find out what the complaint is, what the history is, talk to the person who's being complained about, talk to witnesses, and find out really what the problem is, and then take steps to ensure that it doesn't continue.
Let me go one further step on this. If the employer does that, has talked not only to the employee who's claiming I'm being bullied, but also the employee who's doing the bullying, and in all good faith, the employer is saying, you cannot do this. You must not do this anymore. This is something that our office will not permit. And the bullying employee continues to do that. If the employer then follows through with a sanction such as demotes the person or does something that in some way will affect that person's career or whatever the job may be, is that person, the bullying employee, then entitled to bring an action against the employer for some kind of improper sanction?
Well, that is a case I'd defend any day.
Will you?
I mean,
okay.
I wouldn't take that case.
You would not? Okay,
you.
The plaintiff's attorney would not take it.
And I would be glad to defend that case.
Okay.
Because the employer is doing its job
to prevent
a hostile work environment or a bullying environment.
Good.
And let him come on, because we'll win that case
nine times out of ten. I wouldn't take that case. It's probably not a sympathetic plaintiff to be representing, and that you don't have the legal support there.
So all you bullies out there, I hope you heard this. You have no cause of action available to you if you get demoted or fired for your bullying.
Well, Aaron, I just have a question. You know, in the statute AB 2053, they specifically say there's no requirement that the abusive conduct need be based on a protected category, you know, like harassment.
Right.
Do you read into that any type of future claim that you can pursue some type of public policy claim for bullying?
Yeah. I mean, I think it would be worth a shot. I mean, often you have laws that tell you what need to happen, but there's no penalty if it doesn't happen. There's no private right of action. What that means is if the employer doesn't follow the requirement, the employee doesn't automatically have a right to bring a claim on that. But what you could do is if the employee points out to the employer, hey, you're not following the law here, you're not providing the training, and the employer says, be quiet, you're fired, I would come along and say, look, you wrongfully fired this person and you violated public policy, and that public policy is reflected in this statute that Theo just mentioned. Now, let me ask you this, Theo. If I brought that claim, let's say that was the only argument that I had, what would you do in response to that?
I would file a demur.
What does that mean, though?
That means a motion to dismiss the case, because I do not think that AB 2053 provides you any type of remedy or gives you authority in which to take action. The statute does not provide any type of way to pursue damages for such a situation.
Well, let me ask you this. What happens if your client has a handbook or a policy that outlines the steps that the employer is going to take if an employee comes to them with a complaint about bullying, and they completely violate their own policy?
Well, you're talking about a breach of contract claim.
Would
there.
Would that fly? Would you fight?
That's a breach
that?
Of contract claim. That's not a violation of AB 2053. And you know, it doesn't have to be a statute, but if a employer in a policy sets forth a standard and they fail to follow the standard, I know you're going to sue them for breach of contract. And, you know, possibly I can raise some defenses, but I always tell my clients, if you're not willing to follow your policy, don't put it in writing.
Okay. All right. And are you aware at this point, Aaron, any employers doing that? Putting that into the policy,
yeah,
the written policy?
I see it all the time.
Do you?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm actually recommending to my clients that they actually take action to ensure that we don't have bullying in the workforce. I ask my clients to do kind of a workplace culture survey to find out what's going on in the workplace. I actually recommend them consider putting into place a written policy for forbidding bullying in the workplace. And then, of course, in California, AB 2053 now requires that bullying be part of the harassment training, but I recommend that they do that regardless of whether they have 50 or more employees.
Well, the other thing is you want to make sure that your clients have a hook so that when they confront a bully, they can say, look, you're violating our company policy. We're going to take action against you.
Exactly. And the whole point is to get management in line.
That's right.
Yeah, that's very good. And I appreciate how forceful you are on this. No, Theo, really, you rank very highly in this area. And I think that's very important to hear this from a major attorney who represents employers. All right, everybody, it's about not quite 7:27. This is 91.7, your local public radio station, KLW in San Francisco. This is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. We're talking about bullying in the workplace. What I want to do is invite you to call in, ask questions, make comments if you wish, not only about bullying or harassment, but any other area of employment law if you'd like. And that number is this is a toll-free number, by the way, 866-798-8255. 866-798-8255. KLW, by the way, I hope you know, has been on the air 75 years. It is a true gem. It's still not commercial and continues to grow, which is marvelous. Because you've told KLW that you like the way it does its brief fundraising, that's why all of the people here at KLW are so strong on not being commercial. I've been in public radio for 35 years and have been producing Your Legal Rights for 31 years. By the way, there are some magic numbers here I'd like you to take into account. Your job, of course, is to continue this station being non-commercial by calling 1-800-525-9917 or going on the web at klw.org. This is the fifth year of on-air fundraising that doesn't interrupt the programs that you value. So our promise, with your continued yes support, great support, is that it should take no more than 60 or 90 seconds to ask you to do your part to keep KLW growing. I ask you to help to keep KLW growing by calling 1-800-525-9917 or going to the web www.klw.org and make your contribution to maintain our very valuable non-commercial programming. And for those of you who might want to get a copy at the good graces of NOLO, NOLO Books, Your Rights in the Workplace, which is authored by Barbara Kate Reppa, for $120, that will be your gift from this station if you'd like to pledge $120. Again, the number 1-800-525-9917 or go to the web klw.org. All right, we're going to go back to the program. And for those of you who would like to call in, I urge you to do so, 866-798-8255. Pardon me, we are not only live in the Bay Area, but we're live on the Internet at www.klw.org. So keep that in mind, wherever you may be, actually, if you are actually in any other state besides California, you can call in, too, to the 866-798-8255 if you have some points that you might like to raise. And frankly, I'd like to know where you're calling from. But let's do this. For those of you who've tuned in maybe a little bit late, let me tell you who my guests are. They are Aaron Minnis, a partner in the San Francisco law firm of Minnis and Smollett's. My other guest is Theodora Lee, a shareholder in the worldwide law firm of Littler Mendelsohn. She's in the San Francisco office. Theodora is an advisor to the Labor and Employment Law section of the State Bar, which funds this particular program. And what we're going to do is we're going to talk to Roberta first. Roberta, welcome to the program.
Hello. Thank you.
Sure.
You mentioned the fact that there's already a law about bullying in schools.
Yes.
I wondered if you could say any more about that. We're using restorative justice in schools, but what about outside of the schools with younger people?
When you say with younger people where, Roberta?
High school kids or not in job situations. On the street, neighborhood things.
Okay.
Bullying as an activity.
Okay, well, let's get some comments on that and see what comes up. So turn your radio back up. Thank you very much for calling.
Thanks,
and you're calling from where?
Richmond.
Richmond. Okay, thanks very much.
Thanks.
Well, I can just say, having represented a few of the school districts, that most school districts have policies prohibiting bullying. As I mentioned, the education code prevents bullying in the schools. But if I understand your question, you're talking about whether there are policies out there in the community that prohibit bullying. And I can't speak to that issue, but if you're talking about general school districts, most, if not all, of the school districts in California have their own internal anti-bullying policies and will take action in suspending are expelling students who violate those policies.
Theo, do you know if that extends to faculty or staff at the school? Say, for example, a teacher is being bullied by a student.
That most of the policies do that, because I have been involved in a situation where students were taunting and bullying a gay teacher, and the student was suspended and eventually expelled pursuant to the district's policy.
All right. Let me do a couple of announcements here before we take our next call. Support for KOW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. If you have a legal problem, you may need to talk to a lawyer. The San Francisco Bar Association's Lawyer Referral Service can arrange an appointment for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation in both San Francisco and Marin County. For a referral to a lawyer, call 415-989-1616, 415-989-1616. This program is also funded by the San Mateo County Bar, which also has a lawyer referral service. You can call your own. That's 650-369-4149, 650-369-4149. If you're in any other county in California, every county has a bar association and a lawyer referral service. You can call your own during normal business hours. Tell them what the problem is. They'll do their best to find someone who's experienced for you and set you up for a half-an-hour consultation. With rare exception, for a half-an-hour consultation throughout the state of California, you will pay through lawyer referral somewhere between $25 to $35. It's a great public service. That money does not go to the attorney. It goes to the lawyer referral service to keep that public service ongoing. The other thing that I'd like to let you know about, those of you in the Bay Area, tomorrow, Thursday, May 14th, starting at 5:30 p.m. at Hastings College of the Law, there's a community forum entitled Meet the Judges. And judges of the San Francisco Superior Court and representatives of the court will be there to explain to you. It's a free forum, by the way. Explain their departments and answer your questions about the court processes and more. And the various departments are civil harassment, restraining orders, family law, housing, traffic, small claims, access, self-help center, and jury service department. Again, that's tomorrow, 5:30 p.m. to 7 p.m., light refreshments. You'll have some light refreshments with the judges. And that's hosted by UC Hastings College of the Law, the Alumni Reception Center. The address is 200 McAllister Street in San Francisco. 200 McAllister Street, San Francisco. And this is presented by the Bar Association of San Francisco and the Superior Court of California, County of San Francisco. And we've got Grace. Welcome to the program.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm here in the program. I wanted to just kind of make a comment about a personal experience that I had with bullying. There was a new employer that took over our hospital. Obviously, lots of employees. And I was singled out for whatever reason the bully thought I needed to be made an example of. So she fabricated a bunch of stuff that she said that I said to her, which no one else would have heard, but it was completely out of character for me to have done that. So I've been at this employment for over 20 years, never had a problem, never had an issue, and here now I'm faced with this extended probation. You know, I'm on this, you know, they're ready to slide me out the door. So I went to HR because I knew that I hadn't done anything wrong, and I wasn't sure what was going on in the manager's mind as far as why she would pick on me and make all this stuff up. But she picked on the wrong person because I have enough wherewithal that I can stand up for myself. But what I did was I investigated what bullying was about, and I read a book that was, I can't remember the author, and I'm so sorry to tell you this, but it's out of print anymore. It was a British author, and he talked ad nauseum about what bullies do and why they do it and who they pick on, and it was textbook what she was doing to me. But a lot of times the psychological effect that bullies have on people keep them from saying anything. So there's a ton of bullying that goes on in the workplace, and people are afraid. And even other people that aren't being bullied are afraid to come forward because of retaliation for their jobs. So people keep quiet. I was given advice by people that I know, hey, just let it blow over, fly under the radar, don't worry about it. And it was like, so I sat on it for 2 weeks, and I thought, no, she's assassinating my character here. I'm not going to do that. So I did go to HR. I asked if there was an anti-bullying policy that was in place, and those were the words that I used, and I sent them in an email, so it was all written down, and the bullying stopped.
Good.
Yeah, that's
good for you, Grace. Good for you.
I just want to say you can stand up for yourself. I didn't even consider anything legal. I mean, I like my job.
Oh, sure, sure. And you want to keep your job.
Absolutely. Yeah. Everybody in that position wants to keep their job. And so a lot of times you just want to keep your mouth shut and hope to blow over.
Yeah.
And I thought, you know what? I didn't feel right about letting that happen.
Grace, we're going to move on, but I thank you very much. Obviously, your story is very valuable for others who may be being subjected to bullying, and I appreciate very much your calling in and telling us about it. So thanks so much.
You're more than welcome.
I want to take some other calls before we end. Any comments from either Aaron or Theo? Okay.
I think that's a successful story right there. She didn't have to go to a lawyer.
It's a wonderful
she didn't
story.
Lose her job. She spoke out for herself. The employer did the right thing, and they put a stop to it.
And that's why I encourage my clients to have a policy and to take corrective action to keep your employees from going to a lawyer like Aaron.
I think this is terrific. Okay, Lucas, welcome to the program.
Hi, yes. So I was a server at a restaurant in the San Mateo area. And I know there's a lot of cases in the hospitality industry of unpaid breaks and overtime situations. And when I had that case happen to me, unfortunately, it's been maybe a couple weeks and I still don't know where to go. And I think this would probably be a great place to ask you guys and to see what would be my cases for litigation or something, because, you know, I've worked, and I know other people have worked 9, 10, 11 hours there without a break or without even...
Well, that's a violation of the law, Lucas.
Oh, it happens a lot. And we've called labor places and the HR, and it's just gotten kind of blown over, just not looked at. I don't know exactly.
Are you no longer a server with that restaurant?
That is correct.
So you left. Did you leave on your own, or were you fired?
I left on my own, actually.
You did. And how long had you been there?
I was there for approximately 6 months.
6 months, and how many breaks didn't you get that you think you're entitled to, roughly?
Zero, because they phrased it in the way that they phrased it in the way of the California apparently has a waiver you could sign for an unpaid break of 6 hours or a situation like that. And they tried to reverse this on us somehow, and I don't know how they did it. They made us refuse the break, pretty much.
You apparently, have you seen a lawyer, an employment lawyer, to discuss this or not?
We've contacted a few, but we've honestly not gotten back from any of them, actually.
I see. Okay, well, let me get some comments for you. One of the things that I think is a problem, that we can only take so much information from anyone who calls in. So what generally I try to do is have my guests give you some direction of what you might do next. And apparently you've had no luck in apparently talking with some employment lawyers as to what your what potential you might have for getting some kind of compensation for the breaks that you weren't permitted to take. So if you'll take the answer on the air, we'll have some discussion. What thoughts do you have for him, Aaron?
Yeah,
please?
Well, you know, we get a lot of calls about this situation. There are laws that provide for overtime if you're working more than 8 hours a day or 40 hours a week. You cannot waive overtime. There's also the requirements about meal and rest breaks. A good option for somebody who's got a pretty discrete amount of damages that may flow from those is to actually go to the labor commissioner.
Mm-hmm.
The California Labor Commissioner, Department of Industrial Relations, you can go on the website. They have a lot of good information that's available, and it's pretty easy to understand. If the person's interested in filing a claim with the labor commissioner, they'll help you fill it out. You can do it online. They'll investigate it, perhaps. They'll have a meeting where you can discuss resolving the claim with the employer. And if none of that works, and if you stick with the process, you can have a hearing. You don't need a lawyer for the hearing. You can keep it really
simple. Before the labor commissioner?
Absolutely.
I see.
The employer may have a lawyer there, but you don't need one. You have your papers ready to show, you know, the hours that you worked. If those are recorded, great. If not, you can recreate the hours that you think you worked. You can present information about how much you were paid for that period. The labor commissioner is going to ask the questions that she has to make up her mind. At the end of the process, at the end of the hearing, she's going to make a written award, which is binding mm-hmm. unless either party appeals it within a specific period of time.
And by appealing, where do you go to appeal something like that?
It's appealed to San Francisco Superior Court okay. or whatever county
where,
you happen to be
wherever you may be.
In.
Okay. Right. All right. Theo, any comments?
I have no comment on
okay.
that.
Okay. All right. Well, there you are, Lucas. That, if you hadn't thought about the California Labor Commissioner's Office, that's a good one for you to try next. All right. We have Leonard. Welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I worked for a trucking, or rather a company that I was a truck driver for, and I was only being paid a percentage of a load, and it was piecemeal pay. Now, I was a full-time employee, paying for my medical and dental benefits and so forth, but only getting 29% of the tariff rate to deliver product. Is piecemeal pay legal in California?
Now, let me make sure I understand that the reception of where you're calling from is not good. We had lost a couple of things. Your position was what, Leonard?
I was a truck driver.
A truck driver, okay. But you were only getting 29% of what? Can you give us a sample by numbers of what you're talking about?
Okay, if the company was charging a customer $100 to deliver the product, I only got $29.
I see. Okay, so the company got, obviously, 71.
That's correct. And I only got paid for the delivery only, not for anything else. I didn't get paid for any overtime that was put in, any tarping or untarping of the product, tying it down, no lunches, and so forth.
Wow, wow. And this is a California company you're working for?
Yes, sir.
Uh-huh. Aaron, any comments for Leonard?
Yeah, you know, I've looked at piece rate schemes before, and piece rate, for people who may not know, usually means that you're paid a rate for certain things. So say, for example, your job is to go out and install measures in people's house. You might get paid a rate for each measure that you install, but you may not be separately compensated for the time that it takes to get to the house, wait around for the client, for the customer to get home, installing measures that ultimately aren't approved, things of that nature. So the claim is basically, look, I'm only getting paid for these measures that I'm installing, but I'm not getting compensated even a minimum wage for all of this other time that I'm spending during the workday. And so in a situation like that, and there's authority or support for this position, your argument would be that I'm not being paid a minimum wage. In addition to the minimum wages that you're due, there's a penalty that applies that's equal to the amount of unpaid wages, plus attorney's fees and interest and other remedies that you could pursue. Now, depending on what kind of business that you're in, there may be some federal laws out there that step in and occupy the field and give you the requirements for what needs to be paid and so forth. But that requires a little bit of research by a lawyer.
Where would you suggest he go? It sounds to me that Leonard, are you still there?
I'm here, but I'm no longer with the company.
Yeah, okay. Stop for a moment, if you would. Have you gone to a lawyer to try to get some advice?
Negative.
No, okay. And how recent was this that you left this business?
A couple of months ago.
Okay, all right. So it's still certainly within a statute of limitations. Where, Aaron, would you suggest that Leonard go? Not, we don't know where he's calling from, but where should he go?
Well, you know, I would try the labor commissioner first. I would also try to reach out to a lawyer, because if you've got a long history with the employer and you can go back 3 or 4 years in some examples.
Well, I think he said 6 months.
Oh, six.
You
six
were there
months.
6 months, or am I wrong?
No, it's incorrect. That was there 9 months. And
pardon
I'm actually in Fremont, California.
Okay, all right. Alameda County. Okay, go ahead.
I would suggest going to the labor commissioner. I think you want to keep as much – if you've got a valid claim and you can go through a process and get an answer, especially if it's in your favor, you want to keep as much of that as possible. And spending it on lawyers is not going to be helpful. So if you can go through the labor commissioner and file that claim, then she might be able to provide the answers that you need.
Okay.
Any comments?
Other than that, piece rate compensation is quite complicated. And as Aaron mentioned, there are a number of defenses on federal preemption. We've had a number of those cases. So even though Aaron is advising that you go to the labor commissioner, you may find your claim preempted by federal law, just to let you know.
Okay,
but do it, Leonard. It's worth your effort. It's not going to cost you any money to go to the labor commissioner's office. You got nothing to lose, but maybe something to gain.
All right, one more question.
Yeah.
Preempted by federal law. Can you define that for me?
Well, the Department of Transportation regulations, for instance, you said you were a driver. Most drivers are governed by the Department of Transportation regulations, DOT. And depending on the industry that you work in, they may preempt state law.
But that still means he has that means he still would have rights under the Department of Transportation, doesn't it?
Well,
does
the Department of Transportation is not as liberal as California wage and hour law.
Okay. I think there might be different rules that apply basically in a different place to bring your claim.
And it may be that the claim is totally barred by whatever the regulations that govern your industry. So the only way that you're going to be able to test that is to probably go to the labor commissioner and let the defenses be raised by whoever your employer is.
Leonard, do it.
Okay.
Go to the labor commissioner. See what they may be able to do for you. Thanks very much for calling, and good luck to you. All right, we have a few more minutes that you can call in if you like to your legal rights. We have a toll-free number, 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. For those of you who have been listening to this program for a while, you know on the fourth Wednesday of the month that we do a Call a Lawyer night, and we will be doing one on the fourth Wednesday of this month, May 27th. So if you'd like to talk to an attorney off the air while I'm doing the regular program on the air, you'll be able to talk to an attorney or attorneys at no cost to you, no obligation whatsoever. It's a great public service these attorneys perform. We've been doing it for years with attorneys who are members of the San Francisco Bar, the San Mateo County Bar. We also have certified specialists from the California Board of Legal Specialization, and so it's worthwhile. You might want to jot down the magic number, by the way, 1-800-525-9917. That's for Call a Lawyer the fourth Wednesday of the month, 1-800-525-9917. 617. And I would like to take another call or two, if we can, before the end of the program. Who do we have? We have Chris. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. My question is kind of similar to the one that was just on. I have a hair salon, and our employees are paid commission. And there's a question between my business partners and I whether it is legal for us to ask somebody to come in and work a shift from 10 until, say, 6, even though their first client is not until noon.
What do you have them do? You just have them wait there for people to walk in? Is that the idea?
Exactly.
I see. Okay. So if the first client doesn't show up until noon, your question is, if you are asking the hair stylists to show up by 10, stay till 6, do you owe them something for the 2 hours before noon in your example? Is that your question?
Exactly. My understanding from what I've heard was that as long as they're, say they do 5 haircuts a day,
yeah,
as long as what we pay them averages out to minimum wage for the number of hours they're there, then we were okay.
That's a very interesting thought. Okay, maybe we have some comments here. And by the way, Chris, please understand that under the State Bar's ethics rules, my guests are not entitled to give specific legal advice, but to give you some direction, so keep that in mind. Go ahead, if you would, Aaron, please.
Well, I think, you know, generally if somebody came to me with that situation, and I don't represent employers, so this question might be more appropriate for Theo than me.
Well, let me just ask a couple questions, because you have classified them appropriately as employees and not independent contractors, correct?
Correct.
And so the issue is whether they work time. So if they are working from 10 to 6, and after you calculate the number of hours, that would be 8 hours in the day. And since they're paid on a commission, so long as the commission itself and the actual money in their pocket is sufficient enough to cover the minimum wage for 8 hours that they're working, then you're covered. If it is not, you have a problem, because you are controlling their time from 10 to 12, even though they're not doing hair. And the real issue is whether that's considered work time. And since you're requiring them to come to work, any labor commissioner or any court is going to determine that time from 10 to 12 is work time, and those employees have to be compensated for it. And at a minimum, in California, you have to pay the minimum wage. So once you do the calculation of how much you're paying them for the day, if it falls below the minimum wage, then you've got to restructure your situation.
Right. I think the challenge that you have is for the situation where the person comes in from 10 to noon, for example, and they're expecting the customer to come in at noon for their noon appointment, and it cancels.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if the employee's
problem.
Day is over at that point and they go home, well, if they didn't earn a commission, they essentially weren't paid for 2 hours of work.
Yeah.
And that's a problem.
Yeah.
So, like I said at the outset, from 10 to 12, since you're requiring that they be there, that would be considered work time. And if they have no customers for which to earn money, then you, the employer, are responsible for paying that minimum wage.
Okay. But you think that I do have it correct as long as it averages out? Is that what I understand?
Well, you have to take the commissions. If they have customers from 12 to 6 and they are being compensated based on a percentage of whatever that service fee is, and that compensation for the whole 8 hours is more than minimum wage, then you're covered. If it's not, that's
okay.
A problem.
I think also you're going to this area of averaging and so forth, it's a little bit in flux. You're going to find some judges or courts that find it one way, and you're going to find in a different situation where they're going to find it another.
My business partners, I want to do the right thing, but we keep getting kind of different answers.
That's because there's different opinions out there.
Yeah.
Can I ask one more very quick question?
Sure, very quickly, if you would, Chris.
we're required to give them a lunch hour. What if they choose to do a client during that lunch hour?
Well, the law is that you must permit the employee to take lunch. If the employee, and you have to make sure that you provide them the opportunity to take lunch. If you don't, you have to pay them a meal period penalty. If the employee chooses to do a customer, you need to have documented that it's the employee's choice, but you can't have insisted that they do that customer doing
their... Which we do not. Every employee has a lunch hour on our computer, but if they want to squeeze a client in, they're able to.
I think what the situation that I've seen is the employee, maybe they look around at their coworkers and everybody's skipping the lunch. The owner, the manager, tolerates it, maybe even encourages it a bit. And you've got the one employee who wants to take the lunch but doesn't feel comfortable asking for their lunch break or feels pressured to work through lunch in order to save the company money or get that extra client.
We have two people that do take lunches every day, and we don't say anything about it.
Right.
Everybody else, it's their choice.
I take it, Chris, have you conferred with an attorney or attorneys on this at all?
No, we kind of play this dance where we think we're doing the right thing, but we're worried that some disgruntled employee.
Yeah, this is too important. I think what city is your business in?
We're based in San Francisco, but we've got them all over.
Do you?
Oh, I would definitely talk to an attorney.
Chris, you've got to invest some money in this and get some legal advice because this is too big. If you have several locations and it sounds like it's a lucrative business, you don't want to be sued.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Yeah.
For your help.
So you and your partners need to say, yeah, let's contact an employment law attorney who represents employers and get some good legal advice and be willing to spend some money. And it is a deductible business expense in doing that. So you got nothing to lose, but maybe everything to gain. Okay.
Thank you so much.
All right, Chris. Take care. Thank you very much for calling. I want to thank you both very much for joining us. You've been wonderful, and I've got to have you back. You're just too good. You're a terrific team.
Thank you.
My guests have been Theodora Lee, shareholder in the international or global law firm of Littler Mendelsohn. At least it's not universal yet. Okay. She's also an advisor to the labor and employment law section of the State Bar. My other guest has been Aaron Minnis, a partner in the San Francisco law firm of Minnis and Smollett. Thank you again.
Thank you, Chuck, for having us.
Thank you, Theo.
Your legal rights production staff members, our program engineer, Joanne Marr, and production assistant, Martin McClain. This segment of Your Legal Rights has been made possible by the Labor and Employment Law Section of the State Bar of California. Additional funding has been provided by the Trust and Estate Section of the State Bar, the Lawyer Referral Service of the Bar Association of San Francisco, the California Applicants Attorneys Association, the San Mateo County Bar Association, and the National Board of Trial Advocacy, which also funds our satellite transmission of the program. All right, next week we're going to talk about we're going to talk about landlord-tenant laws, disputes, and issues. My guests will be landlord-tenant attorneys James Coy Driscoll and Mark Seidenfeld. I thank you very much for listening to Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney.